So we're in chapter 4, right? Yeah?
Yeah, chapter
4. Vaish told me the verse, but I'm...
Last week,
39. Transcendental knowledge. 39.
We completed 39 and we are on
40
verse today.
Okay. Let's just read 39 to refresh our memories. A faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge. And having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. Text 40. Agyanas cha shraddha danas cha. Why don't you I'll just do the word for word first, and then you can repeat after me. Agyanas cha shraddha danas cha samshayatma vinashyati. Nayam lokosti na paro.
That'll be $5.
Nasukam samshayatmana. Agyanas cha shraddhanas cha. Samshayatma vinashyati.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Nayam lokosti na paro. Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Agyanas cha shraddhanas cha.
Agyanas cha shraddhanas cha.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Nayam lokosti na paro.
Nayam lokosti na paro.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Agyanascha shraddhanascha.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Nayam lokosti na paro.
Nayam lokosti na paro.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Agyanascha shraddhanascha.
Agyanascha shraddhanascha.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Nayam lokosti na paro.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Agnascha shruddhadanascha.
Agnascha shruddhadanascha.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Nayam lokosti na paro.
Nayam lokosti na paro.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Agyascha shraddhadhanascha.
Agyascha shraddhadhanascha.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Nayam lokosti na paro.
Nayam lokosti na paro.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Agyanascha shraddhanascha.
Agyascha shraddhadhanascha.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Samshayatma vinashyati.
Nayam lokosti na paro.
Nayam lokosti na paro.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Nasukam samshayatmanaha.
Got it? Would you like to read the verse? Yeah.
But
word for word first.
Agnya.
Agnya.
A fool who has no knowledge in standard scriptures.
A fool who has no knowledge in standard scriptures.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
Ashraddhanaha.
Ashraddhanaha.
Without faith in revealed scriptures.
Without faith in revealed scriptures.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Samshaya.
Samshaya.
Of doubts.
Of doubts.
Atma.
Atma.
A person.
A person.
Vinashyati.
Vinashyati.
Falls back.
Falls back.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
I am.
In this.
Lokaha.
Lokaha.
Word. Asti.
Asti.
There is.
Na.
Na.
Nor.
Nor.
Paraha.
Paraha.
In the next life.
Na.
Na.
Nor.
Nor.
Sukham.
Happiness.
Samshaya. Doubtful.
Doubtful.
Atmanaha.
Of the person.
But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there is neither happiness in this world or in the next. Can I read the purport?
Yes, please.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Out of many standard and authoritative revealed scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita is the best. Persons who are almost like animals have no faith in or knowledge of the standard revealed scriptures, and some, even though they have knowledge of or can cite passages from the revealed scriptures, have actually no faith in these words. And even though others may have faith in the scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, they do not believe in or worship the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. Such persons cannot have any standing in Krishna consciousness. They fall down. Out of all the above mentioned persons, those who have faith and are always doubtful. And have no faith and are always doubtful, make no progress at all. Men without faith in God and His revealed word find no good in this world, nor in the next. For them there is no happiness whatsoever. One should therefore follow the principles of human scriptures with faith and thereby be raised to the platform of knowledge. Only this knowledge will help one become promoted to transcendental platform of spiritual understanding. In other words, doubtful persons have no status whatsoever in the spiritual emancipation. One should therefore follow the footsteps of the great acharyas who are in the disciplic succession and thereby attain success.
Wow. Thank you. Wow, so Krishna is making quite a distinction from verse 39 to 40. In 39, he's talking about a person of faith. He becomes dedicated to the practice of transcendental knowledge, and he controls his senses, and he achieves this knowledge. And he quickly attains, the spiritual status. On the other hand, someone who is faithless and who doubts the revealed scriptures, he falls down and he has no standing. So we see in this verse how important Krishna's stressing faith is. He mentions faith a number of times, in the Gita. I'm thinking just off the top of my head, he says something similar, I think, in 331. Let's look at that. He says, those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow these teachings faithfully without envy becomes free from the bondage of fruitive action. Right? And then in the next verse he says, but those who out of envy disregard these teachings and do not follow them regularly are to be considered bereft of all knowledge and be fooled and ruined in their endeavors for perfection. I think in this purport, actually, in 31, Prabhupada says that even if you don't follow these injunctions, because for some reason you can't, to follow the four regulative principles and to chant 16 rounds, this is actually not an easy thing to do. It's the formula Srila Prabhupada has given us. But actually, to chant 16 rounds consistently after many, many years Unless you eventually go deep into the mantra, most people give it up. We say they cannot continue that. Or, you know, the four regulated principles, I know the first time I heard them was I was horrified. Really, I was really just caught in a real quandary because I had met Srila Prabhupada at the same time. And I knew right away, this is a, you know, I wanted to have what Srila Prabhupada had. I wanted to have that happiness and that peacefulness and that spiritual attainment. But I didn't want to pay the price to have that. So by seeing him, I saw what was possible. So I couldn't forget that. But at the same time, I wasn't interested in paying the price to attain that. So I was sort of caught. But Prabhupada says in this purport, he says that even if you can't do it, if you appreciate it, if you appreciate these principles, the injunctions of the Lord, if you sit up, would you mind sitting in the back? That way people can see. Otherwise, you're blocking there. Thanks. Then you'll get the result if you're not envious. So generally speaking, if we can't do something, then we think, oh, there's something wrong with that. There's not something wrong with me. Like this is sour grapes philosophy, where the fox was trying to grab the grapes, but he couldn't reach the grapes. So then he said, well, the grapes are sour. They're no good anyway. It's generally we become envious. Or, you know, the Lord gives us a particular injunction and we can't do that. So we think that there's something wrong with the injunction. But what Prabhupada was saying in this purport is if you remain humble, even though you can't do it, and you appreciate the Lord's injunction, and you appreciate those who are following the injunction, and you don't become envious of those persons, then eventually you'll be empowered to do it yourself. You'll get insight, you'll get strength, you'll get courage. Your doubts will be removed. And therefore, you'll be able to go forward. So, the subject what we're talking about here is faith and doubt. And practically, of all the obstacles to our progress, you know, lust is an obstacle. Right? Material attachment is an obstacle. Laziness is an obstacle. Anger is an obstacle. Greed's an obstacle, but practically the greatest obstacle, the real obstacle, is doubt. You know, we might be lusty, we might be angry, we might be greedy, but we can still somehow or other come and chant Hare Krishna with the devotees, right? As long as we're not offensive. And in that association, we can continue to make progress, even if we feel like we're not making much. You can continue the spiritual practice. But if you have doubt, you give up. You cannot do it. So doubt is the real obstacle. So Krishna's saying here that, you know, one is faithful, he's going to attain success. But for one who is doubtful, he falls down. I was thinking there's another verse in I think chapter 9, it's text 3. Where again, Krishna is talking about those who are doubtful, how they don't progress. Four oh three. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. So again, we see the importance of faith. If we have faith, we'll keep moving forward. Right? When it's all dark, if you've lost your way, what do we do? We stop. kind of start feeling out in front of us, grabbing onto things. You know, if suddenly you're walking down the street and the street light goes off and it's pitch dark, everyone just stops. As long as you know where you're going and you have faith of where you're going, then you keep progressing, right? Sometimes we're driving down the road and we think we know where we're going, but we're going in the wrong direction. But we don't stop, we keep going. Then the wife says, "Why don't you stop and ask somebody?" Okay. Men are notorious for thinking, "Yeah, I know where to go. I know where I'm going. Don't bother me." So, as long as we have some idea, some faith, then we can continue going on. There's another verse. There's a few verses I can think of in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Chaitanya is talking about faith. There's one verse where he defines faith. Of course, I know you know the verse first. Do you know? Does anyone know the verse where Lord Chaitanya, he defines what faith is? He's talking to Sanatan Goswami. Three one two. That's it. Shraddha Shabde Vishwasa Kahe Sudrida Nishchaya Krishne Bhakti Kaile Sarva Karma Krita Haya. By rendering transcendental loving service to Krishna, one automatically performs all subsidiary activities. This confident, firm faith, favorable to the discharge of devotional service, is called Shraddha. And what does Shraddha mean, Vaishya?
Where you place your heart.
Where you place your heart. Can you say a little bit more about that? Do we have a microphone for Vaishya?
Shraddha means heart. Da is an active verb. It means to place something. So everyone, according to Krishna in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, has some kind of faith that it gets molded by, in the material concept, by three different kinds of qualities in the material world. And our original faith, which is described here, which is that all I need is Krishna, and all I have to do is perform devotional service, gets covered over, and we think all I have to do is serve my body, my family, my nation, and we place our heart in those places. I should say, misplace them.
Even some other types of spiritual practice we may think is more effective or more beneficial than bhakti. Some people do karma, some people do jnana. A lot of people do jnana, actually. And, basically karma and jnana, in Japanese we call it jiriki. I think maybe I talked about this last time. Riki means power. Characters are very interesting. Ji means self, So jiriki, self-power. In other words, by one's own endeavor, by meditation, right? Meditation is kind of jnana yoga, trying to understand the difference between the body and the self. It's very effective. In a short period of time, you can come to some deep realizations that you're not your body and overcome a lot of conditioning by your own power, by the jiriki. Seems very effective. And you may think, that chanting Hare Krishna or engaging in bhakti is not so effective, especially if you don't have this realization right away. But then the other word is tariki. Ta means other, and riki is power. So one path, you depend on the other power, the higher power, and the other path, you're depending on your own power. And so we should have faith in a higher power. And also, Prabhupada mentions at the end of the purport here that it's very important to follow in the footsteps of the acharyas in the disciplic succession. So one thing that really nourishes my faith, and I'm sure nourishes everybody else's faith, is when we read the literatures of the great acharyas, and we read about their life and the trials and tribulations that they faced, and the sincerity and the determination with which they took up the path of bhakti. And when you read their literatures and you read their life, you see these are the most intelligent, most gifted, you know, most realized souls. And, you know, they're following this path of Lord Chaitanya, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, Srila Prabhupada. You know, if they did it, maybe I should do it too, is the conclusion. That they stuck with this path through thick and thin, and they attained such great realizations, especially at the end, you know. Even though they struggled, each one of them struggled against humongous odds to preach the message of the Lord. And so we can see if they did it, well, I can do it too. So it's very important to follow in the footsteps of the acharya. That's one way of cultivating our faith. Can you think of some other ways that we can cultivate faith? Since faith is so important, basically, you know, it determines whether we make progress or we don't.
By associating with people who have the faith, we can develop that strong faith.
So how does that work?
Everything works with association. When we associate with people who have a particular type of habit, good habits, which nourish the spiritual intelligence, which help one make advancement, which then automatically by associating with such persons, we also obtain that similar faith. I forget where exactly it's mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion, but it's mentioned that when one associates with a pure devotee, the shower of mercy which emanates from his heart is also passed on to a neophyte who's serving him, and the neophyte can also experience the same mercy that the advanced soul is experiencing. So in the same way, if we associate with advanced devotees, then we also get the benefit, our faith, our conviction, we become more convinced, our faith is strengthened, and it helps us advance.
So association.
Association.
Okay. Anything else?
By following the path, one can see the street signs, and comparing to the Shastra, for instance, that if I hear and chant, then I will feel that I'm becoming freed from the influence of the world's material nature, as an example. And then if we do that, and then we experience it for ourselves, then it builds faith, because we've had our own experience. It's the best kind of faith. And the Shastra is there telling us, if you do these certain things, then you'll get this result. And then when we do them and follow them, so sort of like if you're driving somewhere and you're seeing the street signs, and then you know you're getting closer because the authorized signs are telling you, and then you can see for yourself also the climate's changing and so on.
So reading the Shastra helps nourish our faith. And actually Krishna in this verse, he says that... People who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. So it's very important to read the Shastras and have faith in them. I'm thinking of a verse Lord Chaitanya said about faith in Shastras. It starts with Maya Mugda. Maya Mugda. Jive Re Nahi. Swata Krishna Gan. Jivi Re Kripaya Kaila Krishna Veda Puran. You know where that is? Shastra Man.
Page 309.
Oh, I just opened it. Could you read it, please?
Maya Mukta Jivera Nahi Swata Krishna. Maya Mukta Jivera Nahi Swata Krishna Jnana. Jivera Kripaya Kaila Krishna Veda Puran. The conditioned soul cannot revive his Krishna consciousness by his own effort. But out of causeless mercy, Lord Krishna compiled the Vedic literature and it supplements the Puranas.
Yeah, so it's so important to have faith in the revealed scriptures, because we get road maps and there's some standard. Otherwise, people just go on speculating, huh? And there's just no end to it. And what is the result of speculation is doubt. More doubt, more confusion. Oh, nobody knows. That's very popular these days, actually. That, you know, nobody knows, therefore you can't know. You know, you say you know, you're following your shastras, but really you don't know. And nobody knows. That's a common argument. And
I met a guy in Santa Cruz a few weeks ago. He goes, "I don't believe in belief."
He was serious too, by the way.
What do you say to somebody that says something in preaching?
What do you say to somebody when someone says something like that?
You turn the argument back on itself and see if it applies. So if somebody makes a statement like that, then you test it back on itself to see if it applies. So,
example,
then that's a belief. Well, nobody knows. Well, you're somebody, and you don't know either. So what are you talking about? Someone makes that statement, then you have to see if it applies to what they just said.
Yeah, and just the statement itself, "I don't believe in belief." Well, then that's a belief. So, but he didn't realize what he was saying. So you could just say, "Well, that's a belief. It's an obstinate belief, one way or the other." But the revealed scriptures, you know, of practically every religion is monotheistic, means they believe in one supreme source, God. You know. And from that, their religious principles are established. And up around that, so many speculators come, just like Prabhupada's mentioning here in the purport, there are different people who have said that they believe in Bhagavad Gita, but they don't accept the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. They quote Bhagavad Gita, they know so many different slokas, but they don't accept the conclusion that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and one should surrender unto Him. So, but in the revealed scriptures themselves, you know, if they're taken without adulteration, without interpretation, they're all saying there's one God, there's one Supreme Source, and one has to obey Him. One should feel obliged to Him. And that's where bhakti begins. And that's the whole solution to the problem. You know, the whole problem, you know, we're suffering due to ignorance. Right? And if you take that word ignorance, ignorance comes from the word ignore. So as soon as we ignore God, then we fall into an illusion. And then we develop desire, material desire, and then we engage in activities to satisfy those desires, we get karma, and then we begin to suffer, and then we're entangled. You know, so people, they try and counteract the karma by doing karma and karma yoga. And that may alleviate a little suffering. Or they try and counteract the desire, material desire, by developing jnana yoga. And for a certain amount of time, they may realize they're not their body, and they may see that the soul is self-satisfied, and I'm not the mind, and I'm not the body. But it doesn't go back to the original problem. The original problem is ignoring God. And basically, all religions begin with that premise that you have to remember God, you have to feel obliged to God, you have to surrender to God, you have to obey God. And if you do, then that's the solution to the problem. Then you get purified, and then you go back to Godhead. And if you don't, then there's all these, there's all these different philosophies and paths, but they're all ignoring God. They're still ignoring God. They're not accepting, there's a jiva, who's part, and then there's the Supreme Godhead, who's the whole. They're not accepting that premise. And until one accepts that premise, there's no solution. As fancy as it may be presented, and as deeply philosophical as it may appear, still there's this ignoring of God. And that's the crux of the problem. And the revealed scriptures, they point out this problem. But then mental speculators come along and they twist it and they turn it. And that ignorance comes in and covers the knowledge of the soul. And one falls down. One remains full of doubt, and one basically doesn't make any progress. So is there any more comments or points about this verse or questions you want to bring up? Yes, sir.
Because I came in late, I'm not sure if you already talked about it, but I was reading in some of the commentaries, like Bhanuswami's commentary from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur about this verse. And he was pointing out that of the three, there's three things mentioned: being ignorant like an animal, being faithless, and being doubtful, right? And of those three, maybe it's brought out in the purport also, but of the three, the most problematic and the worst of all of them is the doubt. I guess you were saying that when I just came in, is that you can have sensual weakness, which is probably like number one, and you can also have some kind of faithlessness that can be remedied, but doubt is very difficult. And he points out in his commentary that's of the three, it's the most problematic. There's a hierarchy in those.
We did mention them actually, yeah. But not consciously like that. Yeah, and it's good to be aware of it in that order, because they're all prevalent. But doubt is the most.
And also, just regarding doubt, that there's this idea of there's blind faith, and then there's blind doubt also. It's also an interesting kind of concept that often in the academic community is this blind doubt that we won't even venture into the area of God because it's not even allowed, basically, to even talk about it or even entertain the fact that there could be God. And as soon as you do in the academic setting, then oftentimes you're expelled from the community. So the point is just that it is quite prevalent, everywhere, especially nowadays, that coming from science, coming from, going through school and things like that, that you're not even allowed to talk about it, and that that sort of instilled in people that kind of a doubt, blind doubt.
In my lifetime, I've seen it, Corin, a kind of morph. Or it's the same thing, but in a slightly different form. You know, when I was growing up, when you were all in different bodies at that time. Maybe even a couple of bodies since that time. But people were outright atheists, you know. And we were taught in school, basically, that Darwin's theory is correct, and to be a believer in God is really kind of foolish. You don't hear that so much now. You actually, most people claim to be some sort of spiritualist, you know, even scientist, but not a believer in God. They say we're all God, you know, that the universe is supreme, and we're part of the universe, and we're it. And they'll merge that in with the Big Bang Theory and everything else. And it sounds spiritual, but ultimately, there's no autocrat. You know, there's no supreme being. So they'll talk about it in every way, but you're not allowed to talk about a supreme being. So the same rule's still there, but it's just morphed a little bit.
So that goes back to the question I was trying to ask earlier. Is that when to remove our doubt? When we're in a situation like that, where I was describing the scientists and the different people that were attempted out, being a devotee and seeing that we're placed in that situation, do we just, we have faith, and then we see, as you were, you're making reference to seeing Krishna as the complete whole. You see this situation, even being amongst these doubters, as be, you know, you're testing your own faith, seeing that Krishna is in this situation. That was kind of what I was getting at earlier.
Well, again, you know, we see things according to our faith and according to our pious credit. You know, so you're viewing the situation in one way because mm-hmm. you're a devotee and practically, you know, you're not in this material world anymore. You know, you've come to the end of all your incarnations and you've gone through everything. And other people are in the same situation, but they're viewing it completely differently. And actually, there's a verse in the ninth chapter that I think basically sums it up. And that's, I think it's 9:13, where Krishna says, Mogasa karma, karma no. Where is it? 416. Mogasa moga karmano moga jnana vichetasa rakshasim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shrita. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. Even at the time of death. Even if they, you know, their husband shot themselves in the chest, you know. And those intense times, those who are bewildered, they're attracted to demoniac and atheistic views. They believe in those things. It is a belief, you know. Atheism is also a belief. They don't know, but they choose to believe it. They're attracted to that belief, or they're attracted to beliefs that are veiled atheism, that don't admit a supreme autocrat. So people have an inner need to believe what they believe, based on their past, you know, pious activities and associations. So in that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Yeah. At time of death, you know, start over again, you lose everything. Next. Like that. So, you know, people see the same situation, but they view it differently because of their inner psychological need.
I'm sorry, I don't think I'm clear. I'm wondering, though, the advice to a devotee. What would the advice be of the devotee that's in this situation like that? And is it their opportunity to practice their faith and remove their doubts of seeing Krishna in the complete whole? Not worrying about, not thinking about what they're going through, but what the devotee is going through at that moment. Is it opportunity to practice his faith?
Everything is an opportunity for a devotee. You know, especially these situations where we encounter, you know, the severe miseries of material life. And Krishna recommends that we meditate on the material miseries of life in order to increase our determination for spiritual practice, to become convinced that this isn't a place that we can stay and that this isn't a place where we can become happy. So these are great opportunities for devotees. They're great opportunities for everyone. Because even the materialistic person in these situations, generally speaking, they have a little bit of piety, will begin to think of God. This is called, what's it called? Shma?
Shmashan.
How do you say it?
Shmashan.
Shmashan. Shmashan Vairagya. The funeral. Shmashan's funeral, right?
Ashes.
Or ashes.
Right, yeah.
You know. So for a very short time, you know, one is feeling a little bit renounced. Oh boy, this material world really is a place of suffering. Mm-hmm. 4 or 5 hours later, well, let's go have a drink and have a steak. People get used to that even. So, we should end, huh? Nanda Kishore, he asked me to say a little bit about Japan, but he's not here, so.
Thank you.
Oh, you are? Oh, he's back there. I'm not sure, what would you like to hear about?
Whatever you'd like to talk
about. Well, it's a work of love there, and I'm feeling very encouraged these days. I see that Japan is, you know, for years there were just very, very few devotees there, and it didn't seem like much was happening, and even the devotees that were there were sort of kind of spread out and not doing anything anymore, and there were hardly any new Japanese coming to the temple. So there's a temple in Tokyo. It's kind of similar to here. There's just one or two people living at the temple, and mostly everyone lives outside and has jobs and just comes to the temple, you know, for a Sunday program. We don't even have as many programs, actually, as they do here. Most of our programs are outside the temple, as a matter of fact, and we're finding that that's been much more successful in cultivating and attracting the Japanese population. And until we started preaching outside the temple, really, we had a few regular Japanese coming, but mostly just the Indian community. There's a large Indian community of devotees who are in IT, just similar to here. So they were coming to the temple, but we weren't really getting any Japanese coming. Just a few that had been coming over the years, but no new. And if they did come, we'd see him once and never again. So Madhu Mangal, the temple president, he started having Bhagavad Gita classes at his house, which was, you know, a more relaxed atmosphere. And it's presented in a classroom style where people have notebooks and their Bhagavad Gita and there's a blackboard, and he's presenting Bhagavad Gita very similar to Bhanuswami's seminars that he does when he comes to Japan, where they study Bhagavad Gita based not so much on verse to verse, but on topics like, what does Krishna say about happiness, right? You know, Krishna describes three types of happiness. Is that in the 18th chapter or 17th chapter?
14, 17, and 18.
14, according to the three modes of material nature. Or they'll talk about karma. What is karma yoga? Or what is jnana yoga? And they'll pick a topic like that. And I should backtrack a little bit. You know, there are two restaurants. There's Govindas, which is very small, but one of the most delicious, wouldn't you say, Vaish? Of all that you've been to in the movement? Is it one of the most?
Oh, yeah.
And then there's another restaurant.
Japanese food, or is it?
Well, it's kind of half Japanese and Indian. You know, they do cook Indian if it's on upon request, But it's basically it's vegan, mostly vegan. And what they do is they call it a lunch set that changes every day. And, you know, which was a couple of wet sabjis and some sort of savory, but it's more Japanese style with brown rice. But they're famous for what's called the pakora bowl. See, Japanese like to eat things on top of rice. That's called donburi. You know, so tempura donburi would be like tempura on top of rice. They have all types of donburi. So they have this pakora bowl, which is a pakora with a tomato, a very spicy tomato sauce on top of rice. But it has a little bit of a Japanese feel to it. But it's also using Indian spices, though. So that's what they're famous for. But most people come in and they get this lunch set, which every day it changes, and it's super delicious and completely healthy, and you get everything you need. And they have people who just come, they get addicted to prasadam. They just come in there every day. And then there's different, you know, Prabhupada's books are there and other books. And it's kind of a center for people of higher consciousness, you know, and there's always like some discussion going on in there. Not all devotees at all. You get different people from different religions. One of their best customers is the head of the Jehovah's Witnesses in Tokyo. And so the restaurant has really been the lead-in to these Bhagavad Gita classes. People have come to the restaurant and felt comfortable there, and then they know Madhu. He works there once a week. He's the temple president. His wife, actually, Jumuna, has started the restaurant, and she works there 3 or 4 days a week. And then now they're getting, so people find out about the Bhagavad Gita class. A lot of the people that have come there are vegetarians, or they're interested in, you know, higher consciousness or leading a vegetarian life. A lot of them are yoga teachers and they know something about yoga, and then they see, oh, there's a Bhagavad Gita class. So they come to the Bhagavad Gita class, and it's become very popular. So practically it's filled up. It's there twice a month. And those people, a few of them, are becoming more and more serious about Christian consciousness. They usually have a kirtan and a japa session after the class with some nice prasadam. So they feel comfortable there, and they learn more about Christian consciousness. And then when they're pretty used to everything, then we invite them to the temple. And then it's not such a shock for them. And a lot of them now are volunteering time at the restaurant, volunteering time at the temple and doing service, and gradually getting more and more serious. And it's grown really from the restaurant to having outside programs. And people are gradually sort of taking it up and finding out more. And the same thing is happening at David Davis, another restaurant that's been going for 2 years. It's a different atmosphere there and different type of prasadam. It's more expensive, and they're famous for yogi burgers. And everything is made from scratch. The buns, the inside, and it's Mahanandini, she's Japanese, and her husband is Madhva, he is Bulgarian. They're both super talented, intelligent people, just do everything, just first class. And it has kind of a European mood to it, and it's more like, it's very mostly vegan, but Mahanandini makes everything, all kinds of sweets, cakes, and pizzas and all different types of things. But it's very kind of elegant food, spiritual food offered to Lord Jagannath. And they have lots of interesting people coming in there that are finding out more and more about Krishna consciousness. And it's just a way to connect with people. So I could see, you know, I hope someday that we have a restaurant here, really. And maybe classes and things going on outside the temple that people attend and then gradually come to the temple here as well. I think that same formula would work good here as far as preaching to, you know, people of like American Christian background or, you know, some other culture. You know, it's a kind of a gradual introduction. Although ISV is completely loving and and accepting of other people. But still, it's quite a jump for some people that are interested. They may be interested in yoga, and then a lot of times when people they're just interested in, they're not interested in spiritual topics at all, but they're just interested in the food. So another thing Madhu has at his house is a cooking class, vegetarian cooking class. That's once a month. And then the Bhagavad Gita class is twice a month. And then there's another temple down in Osaka, and they're starting the same program down there, and it's starting to have the same effect. So things are looking up. And most of the people are coming in their 20s and 30s, and they're young, enthusiastic. Some of them are kind of activists, like nuclear protesters and different things, have a lot of energy like that. And so I spent most of my time going to these outside programs, and I had two workshops on meditation. So a lot of people are interested in meditation. But at the same time, they're very, very leery of anything that says God or appears to be organized religion. So that's definitely an obstacle that we have to, attract people on some other level first and then gradually introduce Krishna. So in the meditation class, I introduce the Hare Krishna mantra, but I explain it. I explain who Krishna is and what the meaning of the mantra is, but we don't dwell a lot on it. But we dwell a lot on the chanting and the experience, and then a lot of these people are reading Bhagavad Gita, so they're starting to understand Bhagavad Gita. So it kind of just depends on the type of people that come. If we're teaching the meditation to the devotees, or basically I'm calling them devotees, the ones that are going to the Bhagavad Gita class, then it's full on straight Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's tweaked a little bit here and there. But it's really good to be back.
Yeah. Why they're skeptical of organized religion? I mean, did they have a bad experience in the past?
What is the reason that they're afraid of organized religion, as you mentioned, right?
There's different reasons. I think there's probably the modern reason. We find this even in America too, amongst young college students, and they see a lot of conflict between the world religions and a lot of wars and a lot of strife. And everyone's saying theirs is the only way, right? And they're sort of fed up with that. And they've seen, that within organized religion sometimes there's a lot of abuse and a lot of people are misled by the leaders. And so they're, and then about 10, maybe it was even longer ago, 15 years ago, there was a group in Japan called Om Shinrikyo. And this was a man who studied in India meditation, and he developed quite a following, and they all wore white kurtas. That was their dress.
It doesn't dress.
And Japanese, they're very visual, I mean, if you're going golfing, people wear a golf outfit. If you're going mountain climbing, people wear a mountain climbing uniform. They're really into dress and uniform, So they associate kurtas, white kurtas, with Om Shinrikyo. And this group, they did the sarin gas attack in the Tokyo subway. And even now it's on the news. They keep this news going, the spin machine going. And even every day there's some little blurb about Om Shinrikyo in the news. It hasn't been forgotten yet. So things like that. And then, at World War II, everyone, basically were manipulated by the politicians, just like in every culture, to have faith in the Japanese original religion, which is called Shintoism. And the emperor was considered the representation of God. And so they followed the emperor as if he was, you know, God incarnate. And they believed in the emperor, and they believed they would win the war because the emperor was, you know, the representative of God. And when they lost the war, they lost faith in the emperor. And they completely embraced modern science. It was like this, you know, extreme shift in consciousness. So it's taken a while to come out of that. But now they're all frustrated materialists. You know, they've attained their material dreams. They're not happy. You know, their families are falling apart. They're all alcoholics. And the young people see no hope. And they're ripe, you know, basically for Krishna consciousness. But there's all this other stuff to deal with. And every culture is different, you know, time, place, and circumstance. But I'm so happy to be back here in your association where I can freely chant the holy name in the association of loving devotees. It's a real gift. But I tend to take it for granted for a while after I'm here, and then when I don't have it, I miss it. So in association, it's, you know, where people are so enthusiastic, it's Krishna consciousness is so easy and so nice. Devotees are so rare. The faithful are rare. Rare gems, touchstones, desire trees. So, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Thank you for coming back, Sadhguru. Please keep coming back. No matter how good it gets in Japan.
It's hard, you know. I'm really torn between both places. Because after I'm there, I really want to come back here and get enlivened. But at the same time, I want to be there and, you know, like taking care of the children. That's how I feel. I feel, you know, like the dad. Because everyone's so young, you know. Of course, everyone's young here. I don't know. So, yeah, but it's good. It's really good for me to come back here and get enlivened and learn from all of you and what you're doing here. Basically, all the devotees at ISV, they're on the cutting edge of ISKCON, and everyone's watching and learning so many things and getting inspired, and we are too. There's one devotee named Sudama he's in IT, and he has regular Bhagavad Gita classes at his house, and they're all, you know, watching the progress here at ISV, and they're starting to organize, and they want to start going out on Sundays and do a weekend warrior program just like you're doing here. So you're having this worldwide effect, even though you may not be aware of it. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Gaur Premananda.
Hare Krishna.